1, 2, 3.
I don't want you, but I hate to lose you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I forgive you, 'cause I can't forget you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I wanna cross you off my list, but when you come knocking at my door, fate seems to give my heart a twist, and I come.
Okay. That's George Harrison with Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea, written by Duke Ellington, Manny Kurtz, and Irving Mills, and originally performed by Cab Calloway. This is from Harrison's album, Brainwashed, released in 2002, a year after his death at the age of 58. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today, the song is a cue for where we're going to go with our discussion. And our discussion is about that very dilemma, being caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. And it doesn't have to be that way, but it appears that it's going to be that way. It's shaping up to be that way. Or in some ways you could say it's going to continue to be that way. So we have some decisions to make. Why are we stuck again? We seem to be stuck. I don't know if you will make a case. When we open up the phone lines, you're going to make a case that we are not stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea. But from my perception, it seems that that's where we are generally as a nation. We are stuck, the people of the nation are stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea. It's the Republicans or the Democrats. And that's where we've been for so long, and here we are again. And no matter how you look at it, you turn it around, you twist it around, you run the numbers, you audit your feelings, whatever it is, you just can't seem to really make the case that there's a definitive way to go. And whatever it is that is shaping up to be the definitive way to go just ain't it. This can't possibly be it. You look at the people who are shaping up as the so-called front runners, or just people who are in the field, in the field of play politically, and you ask yourself, are these people even qualified? I mean, do you really feel good about these folks and the choice of these folks, of any one of them? Does any of them make you feel comfortable? Does any of them really come across as having the big picture that this is a nation and we ought to have a vision as a nation? Or do you get the sense that these people are just in it for themselves, ego reasons, for all kinds of reasons, they're in this race? What if you were to apply, let's say, some kind of a psychological litmus test to find out if they're even sane? Would you trust these people with your children to take care of your kids? Would these people be invited to your home for dinner? Are these the kind of people you want to sit across the table from and share a meal and share a drink, could even share a laugh? Are these the kind of people you want to associate with? Do they strike you as being well settled in themselves and normal? No, just normal. You're not asking here for extraordinary things. Are these people the kind of people you will feel safe with? I don't think you would. If they had to apply for a job as police officers, how many of them will make it through the psychological screening test? How many of them would be trusted to operate heavy machinery? I'm making light of it, but you get the point. We're supposed to take for granted that these people are sane, that they have all their marbles, and because they are presenting themselves to the nation as logical choices in leadership, that you're supposed to dismiss all these other, you know, silly little questions, throw them to the side, and just assume that they start out as the starting point with them is that they're good people and they are well suited to the job, that they're sane, that they're okay. But look what we have. On the Democratic side, it's not that much prettier either. We have, look what we got. Look what we've got. And people are supposed to be getting excited about all of this. Do you really think that Hillary Clinton is a great choice? On what basis do you, what makes you come to that conclusion? I have to ask those people who are jumping up and down about what a great thing it is that she's even running, that she's even doing us the grand favor of running. And since she is making that tremendous sacrifice, presumably in our behalf, we in turn have to step up to the plate and support her. Just today, the National Bar Association, this is the Lawyers Association of African American Lawyers and Judges and others such. Oh, by the way, that tells you right away, there's a subtle note that has to be made here. When you hear about the national so-and-so, any national organization, it's black. The American version of such and such an organization is white. Even in the name, they should recognize the reality that we are all living in. And that is, we are not living in an equal society. You can't have just one lawyers association. And for obvious reasons, when the whites formed their organization, nobody else was invited. So you have the National Bar Association, the ones for black folks, inviting guess who? Hillary Clinton is invited. In fact, they say in a press release issued just today, the National Bar Association is pleased to announce that Secretary Hillary Clinton will headline its 60th anniversary of the Montgomery Bus Boycott NBA CLE Civil Rights Commemoration Tour. Whew, you have to take a breath there. That's a long title. On December the 1st, 2015. Well, what do you know? Well, it's tantamount to an endorsement, of course. The Black Lawyers Association, in a year of great tumult, in a year of absolute chaos in the courts, in a year of all of these police killings, in a year of Justice Department certified racism in this country, much of which had to do with her husband, i.e. Hillary Clinton by proxy, they are pleased to announce she is going to be the big deal. And of course, they're throwing in names like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. That's how important this event is, because it evokes or invokes their spirit, their civil rights struggle. And now, without even having to prove anything, without having to answer to anything or anyone, Hillary Clinton automatically is lifted up by these bozos. No demands made, no questions asked, and absolutely no reference to her horrific and her husband's horrific history as it relates to the civil rights struggle of people here in this country. So you see, people are going mad all over the place. There's no ready reference point as to what their politics are, what informs it. And the only conclusion that one could come to is that this is all self-aggrandizing. And the very people you're looking to, you and I, we're looking to people to, in this moment, exercise some degree of caution and sanity because the stakes are high here. For the people running, it's about personal achievement. But for people who have been suffering, it is perhaps a small opportunity, and perhaps the only opportunity for at least 4 years, to get some kind of incremental response or change to the exhaustive list of demands that ought to have been made for justice, for equality, for sanity in policymaking. And then you have this kind of craziness. And by the way, the president of this organization is Benjamin Crump, who is very careful to point out in this press release, he's the lawyer for the Trayvon Martin family. So all around, we're seeing everybody saying, you know what? It is not about a people's struggle. It is not what is good for the people. It's what's good for me. It's about me. And that's where leadership is. Leadership right now, it's all full-fledged, full throttle about me. Well, of course, they have these ceremonial things. You know, there's an election, and you are invited to believe, to delude yourself into thinking this has to do with democracy. Crazy. It is not at all to do with democracy. These are not Democrats. These are kakistocrats. That's their thinking. They are believers in government by the worst possible elements of our society. The least qualified people are in charge and insist on being in charge. And we are letting them. Now, the funny thing is, since we last talked about the debacle of the debates, there's been an update. Now they're fighting like crazy among themselves because the people who had engaged in this little conspiracy, the media and the candidates and the campaigns and the political process, all of them, to delude and to bamboozle the public into thinking that they were all fulfilling a larger calling of trying to explain to the people, voters, just what stake they had in the outcome of these 2016 elections, when we know it's all contrived. I've talked about that here. And in the ensuing weeks, we saw that exactly what I told you is that's exactly how it is. It's unfolding. It's following the script. It's money. Just yesterday, Donald Trump decided that if you really want to know what he has to say, if you really want to appreciate his grand vision, you will buy his book, which hits the stands today, I guess. It's only going to cost you $25 to find out what he's thinking. In the meantime, he will razzle and dazzle. No specifics, none demanded, and the media are they created this beast. They created him and gave him millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars of free time. Now he's a monster on the loose. Now Donald Trump is saying, I am going to set the rules for the debate. Remember I told you the League of Women Voters started out this thing very modestly with a sincere desire that the public should know and should get to appreciate this process. And the media would cooperate because that is, in fact, part of its license to devote some time to the public good, to the education of the public. And so in days of old, when the League of Women Voters ran this thing called debates, that's the way it went. And the parties, the political parties, conspired with the media to commodify it. This thing could make a lot of money. For the political parties, it was, we don't need to put up with the rules of the League of Women Voters. We don't need to abide by them. They're silly women, and they have the nerve to think that they could tell us what the rules are, the ground rules will be for debate. So we don't have to do that. And the media said, no, you don't. And in the meantime, if we agree to terms, you know, we could make this an event. This is an event and a money-making event, because now we can treat it just like any other television show. We can sell ads. And we know that campaigns have a lot of money this year, in excess of $5 billion, according to experts. And they've begun to spend them. So we will make some new rules. And we will agree to them. And what happened the other day, we saw, now there's a big fight. The candidates are now telling the media, you guys are really rotten. You are serving the interests of the Democratic Party. The mainstream media is one-sided. It is unfair. You guys don't know what you're doing, to the point where the Republican Party says it no longer will deal with NBC because of that rotten hosting that it did in the last round of debates. They said, no, we're done. But Trump has gone one step further. Trump and even Carson, they're saying, you know what? We're going to call our own terms. We're breaking from the pack. We're making our own terms. And since Donald Trump is the dealer of all deals, he's saying, you will deal with me individually. I will call the shots on my own terms about debate. So all hell has broken loose because there's a friend of mine reminded me of a West Indian saying that says, thief don't like to see thief with long bag. Meaning, they don't like the idea that somebody should be profiting in the same way that they are from a pretty underhanded deal. See? So that's what we have. And in the middle of all of this, they're still trying to persuade the public that what we're seeing is democracy in action. This is how it goes. The media is totally corrupted. They had agreed way ahead of time that in order to place themselves advantageously for the lion's share of that $5 billion plus in campaign advertising, they would pretend that they're covering politics and, in fact, will be giving free time to the candidate most likely to spend the most, Donald Trump. So they created that monster. Now he says, because, you know, he's a businessman and he knows how to make money, he says, you want to know my thoughts, you silly people out there? Here's my book. I've just published a book, as if he wrote it. You know he didn't write it. You know somebody wrote it and he read it and said, well, put this right here, put that right there, and look, I'll sign it, and boom, I'm an author. Yes. So he has a book for sale. And the book is now the way you and I are supposed to understand what it is his vision is. We'll have to pay to play. See? That's how it works. So the whole system this year, the 2016, I think, is a kind of a political landmark. It is so in your face. It is so corrupted. It is so wrong on so many levels that it absolutely begs the question, we cannot evade it anymore. What is the alternative to this morass that we're in? What is the alternative? And it can't just be, just say no. There's got to be another way to respond here. This madness is only going to intensify. And at our expense. We are not going to benefit from this madness. And it is not unique and singular to the Republican Party. The Democratic Party is beyond corrupt, beyond the point of tolerance. I mean, you just can't deal with this stuff anymore.
'Cause I can't forget you. You got me in between a devil and a deep blue sea. I wanna cross you off my list, but when you come knocking at my door, fate seems to give my heart a twist, and I come running back for more. I should hate you, but I guess I love you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. You up my list, but when you come knocking at my door, fate seems to give my heart a twist, and I come running back for more. I should hate you, but I guess I love you. You got me in between a devil and a deep blue sea. My heart a twist, and I come running back for more. I should hate you, but I guess I love you. You got me in between a devil and a deep blue sea. You got me in between the devil. I guess I love you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. You up my list, but when you come knocking at my door.
Okay, it seems to be had a little technical issue there, but I'm back. So I was talking about Hillary Clinton and nobody asking questions about her, as if they're not permitted to, and they are terrified to ask questions of her, let alone make demands of her. It has been communicated in so many ways that she is untouchable. She's not to be criticized.
And I've been asking for years, how did Hillary Clinton become a U.S. senator? How did that happen? How do you leave the White House as an unelected official? She'd never been elected before. She left the White House as the first lady, and her first elected office is in the U.S. Senate. How does that happen? Is Hillary Clinton really going to make the case that she started from the ground up? She had no advantage whatsoever. She competed fairly. It was a fair game, that she did everything that any other candidate would have done? No. Did she reject the preferential treatment that lifted her up that quickly, up the political poll? No. Did she say, I refuse to take advantage of this? I insist on competing the way everybody else does. First I'll run for dog catcher, then I'll run for cat catcher, and then I'll run for chicken catcher until I work my way up. No! Her first elected office is U.S. Senate. You tell me where that occurs in the real world without some serious corruption going on. Yeah, they had an election, and yes, she ran, and yes, she, quote, won. She campaigned and won. But we are not naive here. It was organized so that she would win that seat. It was a gift. Did she reject it on the basis that, I don't want to take advantage either of my gender or of my racial privileges? No, she took it. Was deep up to her eyeballs in the corruption that produced it. Next step, from the Senate, you are Secretary of State. Well, okay. How do you get to be Secretary of State? Does Hillary Clinton even speak a foreign language, as most Secretaries of State do? The last several Secretaries of State, they were people well-versed in international law. They apprenticed under people who were in the international world. We had people like, whatever you think about Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice burned several tankers of midnight oil studying international policy, learning new languages, preparing herself to walk through the door with serious credentials. Colin Powell had to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to get that job. Ostensibly the most qualified person yet to have that job. Hillary Clinton's credentials are, well, I was married to Bill Clinton. Give me the job. In fact, Barack Obama, that is what I demand, and you will give it to me. And Barack Obama says, I hear and obey. So she gets the job, runs around all over the world at taxpayer expense, gets the best of everything, the best plane, the best pilots, the best hotels, the best limousines. Of course, she did no work at all and made no contact in these various places, that still, we have not heard any explanation as to why she visited all these different countries. Of course, it had nothing to do with the business interests of the Clinton Global Initiative at the time, now called the Bill and Hill and Chelsea Foundation. Of course not. But she was given full sway. You go ahead and you do what you want to do. And then now that gives her, because she traveled all over the place and she had all kinds of people telling her what she should do and so forth, and now she is a big cheese. She's running to run the country. And it took her just about 2 decades to get that done. And she really didn't start running for office until, of course, the plan was specifically set in motion with her desire to be in the U.S. Senate when Daniel Patrick Moynihan, quote, resigned, unquote. Okay, this is how it works. And here she is, as real as life, and leading the pack. And leading the pack with a groundswell of support from people whose nose had been rubbed in it time and again by the Clinton administration and by the Democratic Party in particular. And here she is in leading the pack without having to make any commitments to any demands from anybody saying, this is what you will do and you will publicly commit to it. No, there are no demands being made. And yet people are rushing. Oh, we have to have Hillary. We've got to have Hillary. Hillary is our gal. And that's how the United States is right now. That's the political landscape. It's a kind of infectious madness going on. And people are acting like, well, you know, this is just how it is. And we are going with the flow. So we've got to have some kind of an answer. We've got to have some kind of a response. Surely we understand that we're going to hell in a handbasket. Surely we understand that it's not going to get better. Surely we appreciate the fact that whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans or even the Democratic Socialists, the vast majority of what people really want is not even being addressed. It's money and power, the same two ingredients that have ruled politics since time immemorial. Money and power. Where are we? Where is this other group? Where are the 99%, as people say? What are we doing? Where is our voice? Where is our system? Where is where are our politics? I mean, where is our philosophy made into action? What are we doing? Yes, I know we've had marches and we've had demonstrations and we've had, you know, papers being issued and so forth, and that's great. That's necessary. But that surely can't be all that we should be doing. We've got to do something. What is it? What is that something? We have a year left before it is completely irretrievable. We cannot do anything about it post facto. We simply will be reacting post facto to the done deal, however it turns out. And in my view, it makes really no difference, very little difference, about who gets into office. That is not even the discussion we ought to be having. The discussion we ought to be having is, what is what kind of muscle are we flexing now? And where are we applying the pressure? What is feasible in this time, in this year? What can be done? How is it going to get done? If you have some thoughts, you should share them at 888-874-4888. What can be done? And why are we still stuck in this cycle where we are watching things, we are watching developments, we're watching it unfold, and we know the outcome? We know the outcome. no matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican who wins, we know that the outcome is we will lose. That is the outcome. We will lose. Do we have any chance at all of turning this around? Do we have any chance at creating some kind of movement away from that paradigm? Do we have even the will? Do we have the skill? Do we have the guts to say we've got to construct some kind of system, whether within our own spheres of influence or whether as a broader group? Do you feel that this is in fact happening? Or do you think that it just is going to go the way it's going? And we will be talking about these things in an abstract sense, in a philosophical sense perhaps, but not in a real and concrete sense about what we can do or what we have done to affect the outcome, to change its course, to compel it to do something in the interest of everyone. Because that is, yeah, that's what politics is all about. We have assigned ourselves to be casual observers. We are on the fringes. We're like in the bleachers watching this parade. We have opinions about it. We have thoughts about it. But we have no power over it. And that's the point, isn't it? We seem not to have any power over what is happening. Why is that? And does it have to be that way? In the end, that means we will have to hold ourselves responsible. The inevitable will come. It will happen if we do nothing. And we will not in any way, we will not be able to say with a straight face that we have done something to change the political course in this country. We will be, in fact, talking loud, saying nothing, because it's actions that matter. I'm interested in your thoughts. 888-874-4888. What do you think can be done at this stage as we enter the home stretch here for the 2016 presidential elections? And by the way, it's not just the 2016 presidential election. We have 435 seats to be contested in Congress. We have 2/3 of the Senate up for election. We have mayoral races. But here we are. We stuck talking about Hillary and Donald Trump. And it seems that the whole landscape is being ignored. What the picture looks like, the place is totally out of order. Our country is out of order. Our communities are out of order. And it is because, and I'm not trying to blame anybody, but we have absented ourselves, and we are not really understanding how important it is to flex our muscle, how important it is for us to create systems that work, that counter this. Because this is how victories are won. They know that they can tire you out. They know that they can outlast you. They know that they have any number of ways to confuse you, to distract you, to discourage you. But we just can't let them do this. The price is being paid at all these different levels. The people are suffering. We are among those people suffering. And we've got to have some kind of strategy. We've got to have something that we can do to say we won't allow the inevitable to be inevitable. We just are not going to do it. We're going to interrupt the cycle some way, somehow. Do you see it happening anywhere to a degree that it could be replicated and that we can achieve something in this crucial year? Because my sense is that 2016 will mark a turning point in politics in the United States and will have a ripple effect in other countries, because we know when the madness happens, it gets imported in other countries. They start behaving with the same kind of madness that the United States exhibits during its elections. It's all about money and power. It's raw, it's in your face, and it's clear. They don't care how they get the power and the authority to rule. They care only that they get it. And if we give it to them without a fight, we certainly must give some kind of a fight. Where is the fight? Do you see it anywhere? I don't think so. I don't see it in the sense that it ought to be. We have pockets of resistance. We have people who are doing things organizationally and in terms of, you know, certain communities that have particular interests. But the recognition that we all share a different view, whatever that is, we have a different combined interest that we can fight for, that we could organize around. I don't see that happening very much at all across the board. I just don't see it. Am I being pessimistic? Am I being unrealistic? I don't know. Well, in any event, it seems as if you're a little skittish today. You're not too enthused with the idea of saying what you think about the subject. But I do know that you feel this way, because I get enough of your calls and I get enough of your notes to know that this is a subject that you share. We just have to start talking about it. And we have to begin the conversation soon. It doesn't mean that we wait for the long haul, for some person to come before us and organize us all. We are, wherever we are, we are capable of creating some kind of change. And we should start that process if we haven't already. This is not about waiting for the grand thing to happen. It's not going to happen that way. We have to begin very, very locally, on the block that you live, in your household, at your place of business, among people that you know who share your same or similar mindset. Begin the process of organizing systems that work. It doesn't have to be a big grand thing at all. It could be as simple as, we keep our block clean. We sweep the block every Saturday morning, and whatever it is, start somewhere, but create a system of working. For Brooklyn, Patricia, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Ms. Utrecht?
Fine, thank you, Patricia. How are you?
I'm fine. I was actually listening, waiting for others to call, but nobody called, so I guess I'll be the one today.
You're starting off the conversation, yes.
That comment that you made from the islands when you said thief, say that again.
Thief don't like to see thief with long bags.
Okay, my mother would say, she was from the islands too, she said, thief steal from thief, make God laugh. So that was another one. But anyway, in regards to your question about where do we go from here? Do we sit back and we wait for the Republicans or the Democrats? And I say no. I say we don't wait. I say we be proactive. I'm actually sitting in the headquarters of the Freedom Party, and we're gearing up to, in fact, not to engage in politics as usual. We're going to be doing something. We've actually started to do something a little different. I believe that somebody had made a comment last week, and she gave some preliminaries about what we're engaging in. And we're going state by state, city by city, to get people in interested in moving away from, you know, the lesser of the two evils. Too long and too often we've engaged in the lesser of the two evils. We're saying evil is evil, and we will no longer constantly engage in that. So to the extent we are going to be advocating to writing, a writing candidate. Now, we will do this collectively when all parties, when all, how would I say, not all parties, but interested parties will decide on who the candidate will be from a collective point. But that's where we're going. We're going to do a write-in campaign in this presidential upcoming presidential election next year.
Okay, well, that's a good place to start. And this is what I mean. Everybody doing something.
Right.
Except standing still. That's the thing. Thanks
exactly.
So much, Patricia.
Except for standing still. Yeah. Except for standing still and just waiting. And the waiting period is over. It's over. It's not enough to stand by and let things happen and then be sad mouthed. Do something. Do anything. That's what we're taking initiative here. The Freedom Party, we're going state by state. We started in Washington. Our next, we're going to South Carolina, to Columbia, actually, South Carolina. We're going to be dealing with the issue down there. We're going to put our children first. That's going to be one of our campaign slogans. I think anybody would be willing to engage in putting our children first. And we don't have a problem with correlations, you know, but the thing is that ORCA and nuclear power is not going to be at the top. You know, we're all about organic food and healthy food, but that's not going to be at the top. You know, some of these things that's most pressing to us and our community and among our people are going to be at the top. And those people who want to involve themselves with this, they can join in.
All right. Well, thank you for your call today. From South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Etrice and family. How's everybody today?
Fine, thank you so much.
I'm a little bit frightened. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I know you only have a couple of minutes, and I don't want to keep you. Maybe you can get somebody else. But anyway, this is we're living in a bizarre world, obviously. We have these – and, you know, it's funny, but it's really not funny. It's like if you're old enough to remember in the 70s about subliminal advertising and how television can actually hypnotize some people. People have been watching too much TV or something, because how in the world could we have a carnival barker, mumbling Ben, who's overly medicated and something's wrong with him. I hate to make personal attacks, but he's in the lead right now, okay? And I'm getting a little bit upset because this is actually frightening. We're on the edge of losing our democracy if we don't get up and do something. And it's just very difficult, you know? But as the lady before me was saying on her Freedom Party, we have to do something collectively. Writing in is effective, but if we all have to write the same thing in, or, you know, sometimes it's better than a no vote. But anyway, back to these candidates. I mean, how can people take this seriously? The rest of the world must be looking at us like, what in the hell is going on? We're supposed to be setting the lead with democracy. Isn't that why we're in the Middle East, ostensibly, to bring democracy to these people? Right over there, they have in Afghanistan and Pakistan, I think they have a higher voter turnout rate than we do. And I'm just looking forward to some more of your guests and Dr. Horn and the labor studies guy. He has an interesting name. I forget his last name. Starts with an F, maybe. Anyway, you have great guests and you have great callers. And
well, Gerald will be on tomorrow, so I hope you return. So he's going to be talking about his latest book tomorrow and related issues. Thank you for your call today. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. We'll continue this because it is important. I just want to get people started into – not started. You know, I don't want to laud myself up as some kind of an igniter of ideas. People already have ideas, but we have to get started in creating the change that we want. We just have to do it. And we have to, in some way, pose an opposition to what we know is planned. It's got to be opposed. A lot of it is so against everything that any decent person would want to happen in society. This notion that, you know, you're not going to have this. We don't want you to have that. You're going to suffer. This group doesn't need to get this. That other group doesn't get it. But you're wealthy. You could get it, whatever you want. We can't have these things and stomach these things and see how in as the years pass, people are being ground deeper and deeper into the dust. This does not make sense. It just isn't right. And fundamental things are being denied, and we can't just let it happen. So I'm hoping that we continue this as we go. Thanks for being with me today and allow me to kind of stretch out a little bit and express my thoughts. And we will return to the subject, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months, because it is important for us, whether there's an election or not, but because there is an election, we should be talking about these things as the counter-offensive to what is going on. Stay tuned. Coming up right after this is Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You could reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Tomorrow, Gerald Horn will be with us, and I thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company. Bye-bye. And I come running back for more. I should hate you, but I guess I love you.